And welcome to the Poetry Show here on Enlightened Radio at www.enlightenedradio.org. Today is Monday, the 17th of April, 2023. This is our third show from restarting. I apologize for last week's show since I got the blue screen of death on my computer. Right in the middle, and because I'm doing five shows a week now, it got to be a little bit too much to reconstruct it for the podcast. So we're going to try again this week, and I might even return to a poem I read the last time that I really do like, but we'll see if we have enough time for it. I see that my great friend and partner in poetry crime here, and a poet herself of great beauty, and she's on with me again this morning, Janet Harrison, and the wonders of remote connections, Janet, are once again upon us here, since I know you have difficulty traveling around right now, but and nobody else seems to want to. I didn't travel around either. It's this living remotely and connecting remotely has become such a part of our lives that it's hard to break away from it sometimes. I was talking last week to our Friday show, Karen Valentine had found the vice president of the Young Democrats at Shepherd University, and a nice young guy, pretty well informed. But they had a total of 3 to 5 members or something, and it just was very difficult, unless there's some hot election that's taking the headlines every day. To get people to wake up is very difficult, to get people to convene and meet in person. So anyway, welcome, Janet. Great to have you here this morning. How you doing here? You're up early. I was thinking about if you had a better time or a better day that you wanted to get, stay involved with, I might... we might be able to switch one of the days, with somebody else who's, because other than the Tuesday show, I don't think anything's totally written in cement yet, but anyway, we'll talk about that maybe offline. I'd like to start the show today with a poem. That actually it's three poems, but it's an observation. The poems are about statues and sculptures at a cathedral, and I don't remember at the moment exactly which one. Maybe Janet knows which one it was, but anyway, it's a Genesis set of poems. One, a general in the beginning one, another one, the subject of which is Adam, and a third one, the subject of which is Eve. And they're not very long. They're pretty short poems. But they describe a quite different origin story than is commonly interpreted or read directly from certain versions of the Bible, and it's so inverted in a way that one could say that it's actually not a very religious poem, even though the subject of this poet's work is overwhelmingly, or at least deeply, connected to religious themes. And this is, we're talking about Rainer Maria Rilke. A German poet, the early 20th, late 19th, early 20th century, lived only 40 years, died of leukemia, but had, in my view, one of the most sensitive and original lyric voices in all of poetry. And this is true in I don't read German. And so I've never read a poem of his that was not translated. An interesting thing about his work is that you can, maybe Janet can comment on this after we read one of them, is there's been many efforts to, and many attempts, and many good ones, to translate Rilke's poetry into English. There's been many attempts to translate Pablo Neruda's poetry from Spanish into English, and both of which are, you know, just so rich in the vocabulary of their own language that you would think it would be very difficult. And the consequence is that the translators almost are compelled to become poets themselves as they try to put it into another language. And that has an interesting set of consequences, too. So this is called or referred to, I don't think Rilke gave it this name, as a Genesis trilogy. And the translation I'm going to read from comes from Ernest Fleming. I have to say that because someone else's translation, you know, could very easily, without, you know, effortlessly alter the interpretation of the poem. Anyway, and then we're doing the origin story here, you know, about Adam and Eve. In the beginning, ever since those wondrous days of creation, our Lord God sleeps. We are his sleep. And he accepted this in his indulgence, resigned to rest amongst the distant stars. Our actions stopped him from reacting, for his fist-tight hand is numbed by sleep. And the times brought in the age of heroes, during which our dark hearts plundered him. Sometimes he appears as if tormented, and his body jerks as if plagued by pain. But these spells are always outweighed by the number of his countless other worlds. In the beginning. Now, let's do Adam next. I think we can read all three if we just take it a little slow and then come back a little bit. So, and again, he's the poetry is based on observations of statues in a cathedral of these of these subjects. So Adam, high above he stands, beside the many saintly figures fronting the cathedral's Gothic tympanum. Close by the window called the Rose, and looks astonished at his own deification, which placed him there. Erect and proud, he smiles, and quite enjoys this feat of his survival, willed by choice. As laborer in the fields, he made his start, and through his efforts, brought to full fruition the garden God named Eden. But where was the hidden path that led to the new earth? God would not listen to his endless pleas. Instead, he threatened him that he shall die. Yet Adam stood his ground. Eve shall give birth. So that's the second and the trilogy. And so this is the third, which is entitled Eve. And also, again, is referencing the statue in the cathedral of her. Look how she stands, high on the steep facade of the cathedral, near the window rose, simply holding in her hand the apple, judged for all time as the guiltless guilty. For the growing fruit her body held, which she gave birth to after parting from the circle of eternities, she left to face the strange new earth so young in years. Oh, how she would have loved to stay a little longer in that enchanted garden, where the peaceful, gentle beasts grazed by her side. But Adam resolved to leave, to go out into this new earth, and facing death, she followed him. God, she had hardly known. Now, before I, you know, beg Janet to comment on these, I just observe a few, you know, kind of ideas that are embedded in this description of the statues. And one is that creation, the garden was made by the labor of Adam, not handed to him by God. And that the other is that God is asleep. We are his sleep. He's not present. Beyond the ever since the wondrous days of creation, he might as well not exist. And that Adam accepts death, but changes the immortality of the garden into the immortality of humanity reflected in evil have children. And lastly, that it's interesting. I've read several translations of the very last part of the Eve verses. And in some of them, she follows Adam, but in others, Adam follows her to the new world. It's kind of interesting. I'm not quite sure how the German works there to make either of those renditions, possible. But it's this is a poem about creation that is honoring Adam and Eve, but that is essentially atheistic or theistic at deistic at best. It's not a religious poem. And so I'm going to stop there for a minute, though, and ask Janet if she, I know she's knows Rilke pretty well. I don't know whether you read German or not, Janet, but anyway, do you have a reaction to these, to this? It's just beautiful to me. What's your reaction?
I think that it's a very unique take on things, and it comes from these statues, which I haven't seen, so I don't know what they look like. But I think the idea of God as creating and then asleep, and then sometimes pain, but having all these other worlds that he has to worry about or that are going on at the same time is very unique. It's almost science fiction-y.
I agree. I just love the idea that instead of being you got thrown out of the garden for defying God's rules and for a eating of the tree of knowledge, etc. But this and that. There's always this some kind of themes in many kinds of different religions of how you're going to return to that garden somehow. But this poem takes a totally different approach and says, like Adam and Eve decide to dive into real life and make their own garden and make their own immortality. That's a fairly profound thing to me.
Yeah, so it seems like in the Adam poem, it seems like what the defying God wasn't so much eating the apple, which isn't even in this. There's no apple thing. But that Eve shall give birth. It's almost as if they were forbidden to propagate in this poem.
Right. I mean, it's a very unusual trip in the league. Well, at this point, I would like to pause for a moment and offer a slight little tune here that will lead us into the my next interest, which is a Lewis Jenkins poem and maybe another one. And then I'm going to try to get Janet to, she sent me some poems by Robert Bly and pointed me to one and that considering reading or having her read, because I didn't quite get the poem. And so that's, and this happens to me. Anyway, but before we do that, let's, I have a song I want to play that sets the mood, I think, for this. It's called A String of Pearls. And it's a, if I can get the right one here. It's a by Rhiannon Giddens and a woman named Lauren Dossett. And I think it's just, it wasn't done for a major performance or anything, but let me get the thing here so I find the right tune. Anyway, they do it just in their living room. And it's just, I had heard the song String of Pearls. It's an old song before, but I had never quite heard it done like this. If I can, where is John's thing here? Well, we'll have to do it the other way. Okay.
We're rolling?
There we go.
Precious girls, joy after joy on a string of pearls. I am a daughter, I am a son, heart after heart's hope begun. Mother's hands, my father's curse, love after love on a string of pearls. I am a stranger on a winter's night. Reach for the joy, lean for the light. The moon, a lantern, or the frozen world. Moon after moon, on a string of pearls. The distant candles, the stars, the swirl. Moon after moon, on a string of pearls. Moon after moon,
welcome back to the Poetry Show. We're broadcasting on www.enlightenedradio.org. My name is John Case. This is the April 17th show. And my good friend and longtime co-host on the show we used to do in Shepherdstown, Janet Harrison, is joining me this morning. I wanted to take on a poem. Actually, I did it last week, but it didn't get recorded. And but I like it a lot. It really it connects to me personally in a big way. And it's called "The Dutch Shoe" by Lewis Jenkins, who writes prose poems. Who just passed away a couple of years ago, actually. And he's from the very northern part of Minnesota. Somewhere in north. Sometimes he makes it sound like there's a land between the U.S. and Canada, or between Michigan and Canada, and he sometimes lives there. But anyway, a Dutch shoe is a small boat. Okay, in case you've never seen them, they have actually regattas of Dutch shoes, and I think San Francisco actually has a race every year, to be truthful. Anyway, let's go. It's a prose poem. Doesn't have any notable rhymes or verses to it. And usually, Lewis Jenkins, the prose poem is usually not more than a couple hundred words at most. He's famous for having a very ordinary, plain language, between the cup and the lip, there is many a slip, and somehow something magical happens in the poems. This is called "The Dutch Shoe." She was out of the water for years, since the early 50s, maybe, over at the shipyard in Superior. You could see from the highway, you could see her, her mast down, sails stowed away. I loved that boat. All the time I was growing up, I made plans to buy her someday. What shall I say happened? That my father bought her and put her in the backyard and kept garden tools in the hold? Or that my mother bought her and kept her in the china closet with the jade Buddha and the 8-day clock? Or that her brass gleams in the lime in the firelight, still dry and harmless? No, I bought the Dutch shoe and sailed to Rangoon and Singapore and 100 other places. I faced incredible dangers and hardships. I talk loud and drink all night. And when I snore, I wake beasts in the forest and fish in the sea. Early mist rises from the water. Ice forms on the masts. My hair has turned white and my teeth have fallen out. I can't see a thing and I'm sailing away. How you like that one, Janet?
That's one of my favorites of Lewis Jenkins. I hadn't been familiar with it. But I really, I'm not as big a Lewis Jenkins fan as you are. I like his poems, but this one I really like. I thought it was very original, and I was ready to sail away on the Dutch shoe with him.
Yeah, that's right. I know. It just had I thought that was just beautiful the way it turned up at the end. It just magical. Well, you sent me a poem by Robert Bly. Called yes. "Where We Must Look for Help," and do you have it in front of you at all, or did you?
I have to find it in my iPad. Give me a second.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just say, first of all, Robert Bly is a very famous American poet and of the 20th century, probably, and not only a poet but a critic too. He writes about poetry as well as writes poetry, which not all poets can do or want to do. Probably Robert Frost would be you know, the contrary example. Well, I had a lot of opinions about poems and literature, but you mostly wrote poems and declined, you know, too much analysis. Although he did say one time, in response to the fact that his poem "Stopping by the Woods in a Snowy Evening" or what's the other one? "Another Road," "Finding Another Road," and the two roads parted in the woods. And I took the one less traveled, and it made all the difference. So they kept showing up in textbooks, English literature textbooks, for years all over the country. And he once said that that poem, the one about the about the path parting in the woods, was actually a joke that was intended for a man that he had actually walked through the woods with in England when he was visiting there. And that he made one comment that that people commented on, well, the literature people, for years. He says, "That poem's tricky, watch out." I love that. That's about as close as he got to literary criticism. But Robert Bly, not so much. A man who is both a writer and a student. And anyway, did you find the poem yet,
yeah, I did.
Janet? Read it for me and tell me why you like it.
Okay, it's called "Where We Must Look for Help." The dove returns. It found no resting place. It was in flight all night above the shaken seas. Beneath arc eaves, the dove shall magnify the tiger's bed. Give the dove peace. The split-tail swallows shall leave the sill at dawn. At dusk, blue swallows shall return. On the third day, the crow shall fly. The crow, the spider-colored crow. The crow shall find new mud to walk upon.
Okay. Go ahead. Is this any connection to the crow calling three times before... with Jesus in the Last Supper and stuff, or
this is the ark during the flood when Noah sends out the birds.
Right.
And in the story that we're more familiar with, a dove comes back with the olive branch, and he knows that there's land.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, he says the dove comes back empty. We found no resting place. It was in flight all night above the shaken seas.
Right. Okay.
The dove shall magnify the tiger's bed. So the dove comes back unsuccessful. There's no land.
Right. Let's help
swallows leave the sill at dawn. The dark blue swallows shall return. And so the swallows go out and they come back and there's no land. So he sends out the crow. On the third day, the crow shall fly. The crow, the spider-colored crow. The crow shall find new mud to walk upon. So the crow doesn't come back because it finds that there's fresh land. The flood is
receding. New mud to walk. Okay. All right. I got it now. You know,
But I love the language in this poem.
Say that again.
I love the language in this poem.
The split-tail swallows. The dusk-blue swallows. The spider-colored crow. The shaken seas. So, you know, that's like there's a Lewis Jenkins poem, by the way, called Marathon, you know, which goes, you know, all through the agony of running 27 miles, but he arrives and says, there's no news. what is he trying to say, you think, by the dove returns, found no resting place, and the third day the crow shall fly, but he doesn't never come back either, because he finds, is that a sign that is that the new sign that there's land?
Yes, that's the new sign that there's land.
Okay, all right.
Bro shall find new bud to walk upon. It doesn't return because it finds land.
Right, so the dove.
So it's not the story of the dove coming back with the olive branch.
Right. No, he's turned it around. Right, you know, he's made the crow the hero, but. Yeah.
That was the resonance with the Roka poem, because the Roka took a biblical theme and turned it around, and this is another biblical theme.
I see. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I missed the initial context of this. That's what confused me. I see it now. I see it now. Well, I'm going to play one more little tune here, and then I'm going to come back and talk about one more little poem. Unless Janet, do you have another one you want to go with, Janet? Do you want to talk about?
Well, I sent you the Rita Dove poem, the Eve poem.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw it.
Okay. Yeah, you sent me a couple. Can you read that one when I come back from a tune here?
Okay, let me find it.
Okay, all right. Let's go for a slight little music break. This is another Rhiannon Giddens. Called "We Can Fly," and this is a collaboration that she did. Here we go, with Dirk Powell, and it also is just too beautiful almost to miss. We don't.
You know, that's, I guess that's one of the reasons why making the record was so easy, because our songwriting approaches are similar. Like, I get, you know, these inspirations from history and from stories and from, you know, things that I really think need to be highlighted, you know, and the way that I think we both approach it is really trying to get out of the way of what the story is and what the inspiration is and what the sort of greater thing other than yourself. So I think we both found, you know, that place of just, you know, get the ego out of there and let the song find itself. You know, like "We Could Fly" was that, like that. It was like, you know, sometimes when you write a song with somebody, like, oh, I wrote that line and they wrote that line and I wrote, you know, and with that, I don't remember who wrote what, like words, music. And it's just, you know, I feel like that's fairly unusual to be able to find that place. And so that's something I think is really valuable about our collaboration.
Looking back at me, she can soar above the clouds, way up in the sky. She can fly away from here. Why, oh, why can't I? Daughter, dear daughter, I'll tell you something true. Remember, Eliza, well, every night she flew. They tried to keep her down, but there was nothing they could do. She could fly, she could fly. She could slip the bonds of earth and rise so high. She could fly across the river, a spirit in her hand, searching, always searching for the promised land. Mama, dear mama, trembling in my arms, I never felt before. Daughter, dear daughter, listen what I say. Your granny always told me you'd feel that way someday. That every time she looked at you, she saw the old time ways. When we could fly, we could fly. We could slip the bonds of earth and rise so high. We could always searching for the promised land. A longing to be free. My heart, it is a-shaking with an old song. I hear the voices saying it's time for moving on. She took her mama by the hand. They rose up in the air. They held each other tight, and then they flew away from there. They held each other tight, and then they flew away from there. They could fly, they could fly, they could slip the bonds of earth and rise so. Together, hand in hand, searching, always searching for the promised land.
Well, welcome back here to the Poetry Show, and that was Rhiannon Giddens and Dirk Powell doing "We Could Fly," a composition that they did. Flying away and returning, kind of similar to the Robert Bly poem that Janet was talking about. Janet, did you find the other poem?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well let's do that.
It's an Eve poem. It's called "I Have Been a Stranger in a Strange Land" by Rita Dove. It was originally published in Poetry Magazine. It's up on the Poetry Foundation website right now. And I think she also published it in American Smooth, but I'm not sure. But anyhow, this is Rita Dove. "I've Been a Stranger in a Strange Land." It's got an epigraph, and the epigraph is by Emily Dickinson. Life's spell is so exquisite, everything conspires to break it. So I'm just going to read the epigraph again. Life's spell is so exquisite, everything conspires to break it.
Right.
This is "I Have Been a Stranger in a Strange Land." Mm-hmm. It wasn't bliss. What was bliss but the ordinary life? She spent hours in patter, moving through whole days, touching, sniffing, tasting, exquisite housekeeping in a charmed world. Yet there was always more of the same, all that happiness, the aimless being there. So she wandered for a while, bush to arbor, lingered to look through a pond's rest of mirror. He was off cataloging the universe, probably, pretending he could organize what was clearly someone else's chaos. That's when she found the tree, dark crab branches, bearing up such speechless bounty. She knew without being told this was forbidden. It wasn't a question of ownership. Who could lay claim to such maddening perfection? And there was no voice in her head, no whispered intelligence lurking in the leaves, just an ache that grew until she knew she'd already lost everything except desire, the red heft of it warming her outstretched palm.
Wow. That's powerful, my dear. Tell me what you're... Have you thought about that poem, and what strikes you about it most? There's many Eve stories, many Eve poems. What pulls you to that one?
I like the idea that, you know, she actually is bored by all of the Garden of Eden. Finally, she gets bored with it, and there's no snake, there's no temptation. She just finds this tree, and she knows just in her heart, you know, when she sees it, that she's not supposed to have an apple. But her desire for it grows. And I like the idea that the red heft of it warming her outstretched palm. I love the way that palm.
Yeah, right.
You know, she takes the apple and it's in her hand, and it's desire. It comes from her.
Right.
She's got more agency in this palm.
Right.
She makes a choice. And I thought the language was utterly beautiful.
Yeah. It's very powerful, right? Well, Rita was a poet laureate during a couple of years there, wasn't she? I think she
yes.
was. Yeah. And did we see her once at the Dodge Poetry Festival? Janet and I used to go to the Dodge Poetry Festival pretty regularly, but I think
we saw her once.
I think we did see her there. Yeah, right. And yes, very forceful and very. Edgy, very edgy poet, you know, and writes a lot of different kinds of stuff, right? She's pretty diverse in her interests. Well, I want to close the show today. I don't like the podcast to be too long, you know, and three or four good poems is usually enough to keep you going through the day and, you know, think about some different things, maybe take you out of your the straight and narrow off to an alley someplace where you see something you hadn't seen before. Janet, thank you so much for joining me this morning, and I hope we can do this again.
Janet?
Say that?
I said Sleepy Janet.
Oh, Sleepy Janet. I know. It's a little early. Maybe we can we'll try to work something. I just love doing it with you. Anyway, take care, everybody. I'm going to close with Pat Metheny's We Live Here, mainly because I just want to remind everybody that we're broadcasting from Jefferson County, West Virginia, USA, and the little borough of Harpers Ferry, Bolivar, which is right here on the border of, pretty close to the border of three states, West Virginia, Maryland, and Virginia, at the merging of the Potomac and Shenandoah Rivers. And basically a little, you know, place with mountain ranges on three sides of it. So it's kind of an unusual place. Not easily to defend militarily, as numerous armies have been perched on the mountain ranges around and then dumped cannon fire down into the town historically. But nonetheless, a magical place of history, and I encourage you to come and check it out. All right, this is Pat Metheny. It's We Live Here.